Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Minnick. I am the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Ashley Dunwald. Now, Ashley is an empowerment coach for women with a fondness for working with moms. She is a certified life and weight loss coach. Now, you could say Ashley wears many different types of hats, including being a mother to a son with anaphylactic food allergies, a wife to a police officer, a certified veterinary technician, and a certified life and weight loss coach. Ashley likes to apply thought adaptation techniques to coach women who feel exhausted and overwhelmed by negative self-talk and mental stress, and shift into patterns that allow them to be more relaxed, energized, and productive. Now, most women think they need to work harder or again, create better habits, but what they really need first is to break free from self-judgment and learn radically love and acceptance for themselves. I just have to say that I'm honored to have Ashley on my podcast, and I could not wait to get this show started. Again, Ashley, thank you so much for being on my podcast. I really appreciate it.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Me too. And again, a lot of my listeners are very excited to like hear from your experience and everything, and know it's just going to be a great time for learning. And right off the bat, too, how did you originally get motivated to, I guess, be a life coach?
Yeah. I'm a certified life and weight loss coach. That was not my intended career path, actually. I was a certified veterinary technician when I found life coaching. But really what brought me to life coaching was mothering. So I've always wanted to be a mom since I was a little girl, had always dreamt of it. And I did not go about it in a very laid back way. So I went about it in a very perfectionistic way, from like the trying to the wanting the natural non-medicated birth that ended up being like a 99-hour labor, actually. Oh, okay. And my son came out with severe colic. So the minute he was born, he would just scream for hours on end. I ended up with postpartum anxiety, depression, and PTSD. Okay. And so I did go get therapy. I did traditional talk therapy, EMDR, horse therapy, which I love. I had some medication to help me just get stable during that first year. But at the end of all that, I still realized that motherhood was not that like fulfilling experience in the way I wanted. I felt like I had given everything to my son, kind of lost myself in motherhood, lost my identity. I didn't know what I wanted to do. It was a really hard place to be. And that's where I found my life coach, and that changed my trajectory. So I ended up really being able to change my experience of my daily life, even though I couldn't change the fact that my husband was working nights and I had a colicky baby and I was adapting to all of these things. But life coaching for me was really transformative to have a better inner experience of my own life.
So I'm just going to ask you again, right at the bat, no shame since I'm a therapist, but again, I get the feeling you had more rapport with your life coach or a better experience with therapy. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but.
Yeah. So I get this from my own clients too, where I absolutely love therapy. I believe it's amazing. It has been really helpful for me as well. I would not, if I went back and did it again, I would still do the therapy first. And I've done somatic experiencing therapy actually 2 years ago in the beginning of the pandemic, just to deal with some actually trauma that had happened previously. So I love therapy, highly recommend it. But for my daily experience of my life, it's kind of like the therapy was when I was really not doing well to getting to neutral. And what I found was I couldn't get myself from neutral to this positive, what we're going to call a positive experience. And that's where the coaching came in. And that's what my clients kind of say as well, is really to get to that like optimization where they're learning how to rewire their brain to stop being what we're going to call negative, and to start experiencing a daily life that is more enjoyable to them. A lot of them will say that the coaching is more, I guess, impactful in that way, but it's not better than, it's just kind of different. And a lot of my clients will do both at the same time or kind of have done both. So no shame on the therapy. I love it. Bring it all. We need all of the modalities.
No, but I totally understand what you mean. It's more like it was hard for you to like visualize what life would be because you had a certain vision right prior to pregnancy. Like, this is what life is going to be like as a mother and everything. And when you didn't experience that, is that when some things started to become difficult?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there was like the body level, the hormones, the neurochemicals didn't go great. And then also I didn't know how to use my thoughts, use my beliefs, to create the experience that I wanted in the container that I had of this colicky baby and a husband that was working nights and all of those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned before the podcast, there's toxic terms that you kind of specialize in. Would you want to relate to that or explain?
Yeah. So I use the term around motherhood called toxic positivity. And I think it's really starting. So I have no problems with social media. Like I love a good TikTok. I like Instagram reels. But as far as this messaging has gone kind of to the extreme in that you should love every minute of mothering. You should be grateful for every single thing. And like, we're watching people who have bigger struggles than we do. And then comparing that, well, I should love this and just be grateful that I have it as good as I do. Also, it's just the idea of it should be good all of the time. And, but then we are also comparing ourselves to these mothers and thinking they have it all together and it's easy for them. So there's just a lot of this like toxic positivity and toxic comparison that we're doing in our motherhoods from social media, from, you know, society, et cetera.
So I want to challenge that. Like, what are these perfect mothers that you're technically talking about, right? That the perfect moms, you should be happy. Like TV moms, movie moms, where like, you know,
I think more social media, more we're seeing these moms doing these reels and they've got the three kids and they're all dressed perfectly, or even like moms, it's like, here's playtime and you see their perfect house and they're playing with, say, Legos and there's like no other toys on the floor and everything's clean. Or they're talking about how they have all these perfect routines. And even like the mom herself has this 2-hour morning routine that sounds kind of ridiculous to the rest of us, but we're using those standards. And then also, so we're comparing ourselves against those standards. And then we're saying, well, I should just be happy with what I have because, I don't know where I was going with that. There's my mom brain that just kicked in. Sorry. But we do just think that like, we should be happy where we're at and we're not saying what our body is actually experiencing. Like, I'm feeling these emotions. Perhaps I am feeling like I'm unfulfilled or I don't have a purpose or I don't have enough alone time to myself, or I'm frustrated with my kids or I just want a break. And so I think we're forcing this toxic, like I should just be happy and enjoy this and be grateful, versus what I actually need is to like go scream into a pillow or find an hour to myself on the weekend or take a nap or do something that you actually do need and kind of acknowledge what's actually happening for you.
Well, again, it's okay not to be okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And again, it reminds me just of everyone when they do post on Facebook of their perfect lives, like you said, their family, their accomplishments and pictures with their husband and wives, and they're so happy. It's like, that's not really reality. It's just not.
Exactly. Yeah. And actually one of the tips I was going to say for moms to feel more empowered is exactly what you're saying. And I use the visual of a teeter totter, where I think a lot of the times we're chasing being on the top end of the teeter totter, but the reality is you're going to be at the top at those emotional highs, a tiny amount of the time. You're going to be at the emotional lows at the very bottom, a tiny amount of the time. And most of the time, you're just going to be somewhere in the middle, riding somewhere a little bit higher, somewhere a little bit lower. But that is the normal experience of being a human. And just thinking about that experience as most of the time, I'm going to be somewhere in the middle. It's going to be a little bit good or a little bit bad. And that is totally normal. And then if it's really, really bad, go get the help and support you need. Know that it's not going to last forever. If it's really, really great, be grateful and enjoy it. But no, it's probably not going to last forever too.
So is that what you really teach your clients about, is a balanced lifestyle, right?
Yeah. And it's just adapting your brain so that you can challenge every thought and every belief and look at it from a neutral place.
Okay.
And then decide how you're going to interact with those thoughts that you're having, instead of just letting them happen and believing them and then feeling whatever feelings result from that thought that you haven't evaluated yet.
Okay. So another question too, when you work with your clients, when they, let's say, struggle with a balanced lifestyle, do they ever struggle even finding a new hobby for themselves or something new to get out of their funk? Or is that your approach, should
I say? I mean, that's a huge struggle for moms out here, is I think the word, I don't even want to say it because it almost sounds like a dirty word these days, but the self-care word, again, it's almost like toxic self-care. We're now like, you feel pressure to do self-care and it's like one more thing on your list. Mm-hmm. But yeah, more than even like the hobbies, that's more of the actions, but more than that, I'm just helping them be like, how do we do the dishes from a place where we don't feel resentment every single time? And that was like, that's my brain's favorite negative emotion is resentment. It's really good at being resentful about anything. So yeah, when working with clients, it's like, we're taking that emotion that they don't necessarily want to feel and we're changing it so they can do that activity with a different emotion, which isn't the toxic positivity. It's not like I'm doing the dishes from joyful glee, but I can at least do the dishes without being totally resentful and feel content if I want.
And let's say if or when they are resentful, is it more geared towards the husband at times or is it geared towards many areas of life?
I mean, it tends to be the husband with the dishes or the laundry or the childcare, because again, that is, I guess we haven't talked about this yet, but there is that invisible workload that mothers do that we just tend to take on. And that, yeah, the childcare and the household tasks tend to be where we're doing a lot of the work. It's not getting acknowledged. It's not getting validated. And then we're getting frustrated and then also shaming and guilting ourselves into, I should feel grateful because I have it better than other people or whatever.
I would love for you to give a couple of examples to my listeners, but not particularly the female listeners, but the men listeners like myself, who we may think like, what the heck is an invisible workload or invisible duties? Like you just mentioned, like we're not aware of. What are those?
Yeah. So disclaimer, I'm going to say like my whole perspective is from like a hetero and cisgender perspective. So I want to throw that out there. Not trying to be exclusive. I just coach women who tend to be in hetero relationships and that's my perspective. So that's kind of where we're coming from with terminology, but this should relate kind of to whatever dynamics you have going on. So actually in my coaching, what I tend to do that's different than marriage therapy is I don't do any of it based on the spouse. I do nothing about the relation to the other person. And I love marriage therapists. Thank you guys so much for what you do. But I am going to say that when people come to me after marriage therapy, what tends to have happened is that they had this time with the counselor who helped them learn each other's love languages and learn how to like validate each other and learn to meet each other's needs. And then they go home and they do it for a couple of weeks or months, and then it falls apart and then they're back at square one. So what I end up doing is actually telling them, it's amazing if your spouse is able to help you in those ways. But if they are not, we're going to learn to validate and empower yourself so that you are meeting your own needs without the needs of, without having your spouse have to help you with that.
So I'm a little rusty. And again, I feel horrible as a therapist saying, okay, so there's touching, affection, right? For one of the love languages.
Oh yeah. It's been a while for me too. So touch, words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service.
Yep.
Is the fourth one. I don't remember the fifth one. It's been a while, but I do love that book and I do love that concept.
Well, it's funny because, so would you ever run into, let's say an example of like, let's say there's a male or the husband who's more of affectionate and the wife wants more of performing duties as a sign of love. And then you face difficulties. So then you'd probably tell the husband, oh, okay, she doesn't always want to be affectionate. You try to help them kind of understand, but at some point you just, like you said, need to validate the other person. And
yeah, so I see a typical cycle that I see with my clients is the husband is wanting to be acknowledged for the effort and the work that he is doing. Oh. The wife is saying, you're not seeing all of these tasks that I'm doing. So I'm not at all into validating you because I'm not getting validated. So they're both kind of wanting the same acknowledgement and validation that they're not giving each other. Tends to be like a fairly common cycle.
Yeah. And just to let everyone know, like I'm a single man, I'm not married. So all I could do is try to empathize with what's going on. But again, I'm an addiction counselor. So I've worked it with women at facilities. I work with men. By the way, they both complain about each other in all different sorts of ways. But you're absolutely right. Like that is one of the biggest complaints I get from them is, okay, the man works, let's say 50, 60 hours a week. I'm sure like your husband works a lot and everything. Again, not using him as an example, but
yeah,
they work their butts off. They come home. Maybe they again, they just have the expectation. Well, I work my butt off. I pay all the bills. I put a roof over my kid's head and my wife's head. When I get home, I feel like I am justified not to do anything because of all the things that I do. But again, to take the woman's side, my God, that is a full-time job. I can't imagine what the mothers do. Like it's
yeah. And stay at home or working, like they're all doing a ton of things. And even like, I mean, I think our generation is doing a much better job as the males of stepping in and helping with all sorts of tasks. But the bottom line is that we have these like childhood wounds where we don't feel like we're being seen and we don't feel like we're heard or validated and we don't know how to validate ourselves. Mm-hmm. So all day long, we could be saying like, I'm doing a great job. Look at me. That's awesome. Like we could be saying that type of thing in our head, but most of us don't have that kind, supportive self-talk to do that. Most, especially women, are just ripping themselves apart, judging themselves, feeling guilty, and like evaluating and being critical of every single thing they do throughout the day, which is exhausting.
I have a question. Have you ever worked with single mothers before without a man in the house or a husband to help them take care of like the house? And
I have not had a currently single mother yet. I have had one who is like in a newer relationship, but not okay. One who was single at the moment.
So like a boyfriend, right? Or
yeah,
that's gotta be interesting. Like, again, I'm not gonna dive too much in, but it's like, what roles do like a boyfriend have? And I'm assuming she has a child or a daughter, right? Just hypothetical. We don't need to get into too much details. Cause again, I worked with clients also as an arms worker in this scenario too, where this man is not the father, but he's around a lot and he may help the mother pay for some things, but he's not the husband, he's not the father, but they're just kind of in a serious relationship. I can imagine that being difficult because at what lines need to be crossed or not crossed. And yeah.
And again, like in coaching, we do so much of our relationship work. It's actually very different than therapy where we kind of, at least in the type that I do, we say to only set a boundary if it's like a safety concern. Otherwise we say, don't actually set a boundary, just in advance say like, okay, if you yell, then I'm going to leave the house. So it's always aimed at what you will do, but it's not saying you can't do this behavior because we don't actually have control over the other people. Mm-hmm. So it's really just about like that, like safety and meeting your own needs and supporting yourself. And I advocate so much for getting support, whether it's like neighbors or other mom friends, just getting so much more support. So you're not relying on your spouse, because a lot of relationships and marriages really get bogged down by they're not having any fun time together. And the time they are having, they're just like trying to get every last ounce of effort out of the other person in getting support with household or child care tasks. And if it's at all possible to get as much support, I highly recommend that for your relationship and just the ease of, you know, your life.
So I also have another question too, getting back into resentment. Do you ever deal with this scenario a lot with your clients where, let's say, you know, the wife becomes pregnant, whatever, and they're getting ready to have the child, but they may have to have the awkward conversation of, all right, who's going to quit work and who's going to stay home and take care of the children? Because I'm sorry, stereotypically, it's always the mom who kind of puts her career on hold and then takes care of the kids for I don't know how long. And the husband gets to work and make the bacon, is what they say.
I mean, it does. I do a lot on career work, and especially with women who, I mean, I've done career work on women who have a career and are just transitioning and have kids and whatever. But a lot of times it is the woman has put her career on pause. She has raised the kids. They are now at the school age. They went back to school. And now it's like, I don't know if I want to go back to that career, try something else. I feel like I lost out. It is, definitely a common experience for women to have that struggle.
Well, right. Because again, like you said, so many time goes by and maybe they lost that drive for that original career. So they have to almost kind of reinvent themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it, especially like there's so much fear of going back into it and the unknown, and are they going to like it again? Do they want to do something else? There's another term I do want to bring in here too, called the default parent. And that's definitely part of what you're talking about. But the default parent is the parent that, say, there's a doctor appointment or your kid is called in sick from school. Like, that's the parent that's typically going to be like, well, I'm going to take off my job and go deal with that. Or if the kid's sick, that's the parent who's not going to go to work, or whatever the case is. Like, that parent, those responsibilities of the childcare tend to fall on one parent more than the other. And a lot of, you know, a lot of couples are trying to do it more equally. It's not just one person every single time, but it does get to be exhausting if you are that default parent, to always be the one that has that little bit of extra pressure on their shoulder for, like, I've also got to keep that in the back of my mind that I'm the one that has to deal with anything happening to our kids if we're both not available.
So then, what advice do you say to your clients to help maybe break that cycle, or interventions to apply to, again, change that routine so it's not like that?
Yeah. So I don't deal with the changing of the situation itself in the circumstance, just because that's, again, dealing with another human. So you can always make a request and say, is there some way we can figure this out? Do you want to do it 50-50? Do you want to decide whatever? But really, I do more work on, okay, here's our reality. What are some really creative ways, if I'm not liking how we have to respond to this or how I'm responding to this right now, what are some really creative ways that we can deal with this? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we're like, nope, I just have to come home from work and go get the kid. And we're not saying, like, could we call a neighbor? Could we get a family member? So sometimes getting out of that kind of resentment, we can just get really creative and find solutions. Maybe you actually want to change the kid's schooling, or maybe, you know, there's lots of ideas, but we usually work with, here's our situation and how can we improve, optimize on it? What could we change? What parts of this maybe could look different and work better for us? And then the mindset piece too, of it's okay to feel resentful, or it's okay to feel overwhelmed or stressed or frustrated. That's totally fine. But if that's a pattern that we have and we don't want to keep doing that, then not to go toxically positive, where we're going to feel joyful and amazing that we have to go pick up our kids from school when they're sick or whatnot. But what is a different feeling that feels a little bit better? Like, could we feel determined? And it's always a choice, just understanding that it's always a choice. Actually, you do. So I do this practice a lot where we say, okay, you're saying that you don't want to go pick up your kid, or you don't want to be the parent that goes and sleeps on the floor in your kid's room when they're sick. But actually, a lot of the times you do. It's a challenge and it's not fun. But if you're like, if it's like for me, especially if it's my husband and or me who has to go be with my kid when he's sick, like, I'm like, I'm, it's exhausting and I don't want to be tired. But really, my little, like, mama brain wants to be right next to him when he's sick. So I do want it. So it's acknowledging that it is a choice. You are making an option. You do actually want it, even if it is a harder thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to ask you another thing too. When it comes to your technique of thought adaptation, and again, how do you apply it to clients who, again, have that negative self-talk?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So awareness is the first step. We just become awareness of our thoughts, and I have clients use their feelings, what feelings are coming up. And I tend to say, like, use really intense feelings, feelings that you're sick of feeling, or the most common feelings. So for me, it was resentment. It can be overwhelm. It can be frantic energy. It can be sadness, anger, whatever it is. And then from that feeling, we start having them find a thought that's coming right before that feeling. Because typically you have a thought and then your body responds with a feeling. And we just aren't used to catching those thoughts as they're happening. And then we play with those thoughts, kind of neutralize them and create new thoughts if we need to, or feel crappy feelings and uncomfortable feelings if we just need to sit and process and feel those feelings. And then we look at our actions and look at our results and decide kind of how we want to tweak most of it, from rewiring that thought, checking our limiting beliefs, and then are we resisting feelings or do we need to process some of those feelings? And I do a lot of work also with, like, the nervous system, because I think all of our nervous systems, especially after the last couple of years, are pretty jacked up and hyped, and doing a lot of things to help calm our nervous systems too.
I think, have you ever heard of the polyvagal theory?
Yes.
Love it.
Yes. I love like anything with the vagus nerve. I'm all in. Yeah. I love that we're bringing all that into, you know, this field.
And it's amazing too. And the thing I like about it is it's not really in a traditional like, oh, CBT therapy or trauma, but it's just more knowledge and awareness. Okay. This is what's happening to your body. Okay. You don't feel safe. So you can either, again, fight, flight, freeze. And it's just, again, teaching the client just to be more aware of what's going on with their bodies and why.
Absolutely. And that we all have been through a little bit of, you know, nervous system dysregulation, whether we're aware of it or not, for sure. With all the events going on recently, it's more critical than ever.
Yeah. And I love it how I'm kind of getting your perspective on being a life coach. And then my therapist brain is kind of combining with your brain. Because like we were talking before about like resentment and couples being aware of what's kind of going on in the house, it brings me back to, again, the love languages. And I don't want to say this is a funny incident, but like in grad school, one of my fellow peers or whatever in class was talking about, well, she got divorced. She's no longer married to this man. But one of the issues they had in their marriage were her love language is more like doing the work around the house to show that you're love and appreciation. And his was more like buying stuff. So it was, well, again, I won't say it's funny because, you know, they're divorced, but she was doing the dishes one day, stressed out from other kids running around doing work. And the husband comes home with chocolate and flowers for the wife, thinking it would help. And that made her even more mad. She's like, we don't have money for this. Money's tight, and then I'm stressed with these kids running around doing work, and then you waste more money buying me on stuff I don't care about.
She
went off. It was just horrible for her, but again, that's one of the examples of just not being aware.
And I think like sticking to our own lane, it is helpful, I think, obviously, to have awareness of your spouse and your partner. And once you start doing this work on yourself and start evaluating like, oh, of course I feel this way because I was thinking this. It's funny because then you go around for like, at least I did for like 1 or 2 years. And all I was doing was just noticing and trying to picture what other people were thinking. So like this person cut someone off. Now they got out of their car. Now they're swearing and screaming. I'm like, of course they're thinking that because they just thought that this other person is being a horrible human and shouldn't have done that. You know? So it's like a really fun way to be able to view the world and kind of a, I love it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And especially children too, because our children do so many crazy, illogical things. But when you understand kind of how the brain handles thoughts and feelings, then you can say like, of course my kid is mad. I spent 10 hours with him today and he's mad that I'm not watching him do this little cartwheel or whatever in the 30 seconds that I'm busy. But of course, because his brain is thinking, my mom doesn't care. She's not looking at me. She's not paying attention. She doesn't love me. And that's okay. He can feel that, you know, but I do love him and whatever. So it is a helpful technique. Also, all this thought adaptation work really is helpful from a parenting perspective too, of not letting it drive you as crazy when your kids are being illogical and irrational as they often are.
Absolutely. I'm just curious. Obviously, you have different types of clients when it comes to like, let's say age, race, or whatever. Would you notice there'd be like different types of goals for, let's say, mother with like a brand new newborn compared to let's older woman with 3 to 5 kids? Would it be a little bit different most of the time?
So actually, I find that people tend to struggle with the same basic, I'll say like wound areas. Okay. So it tends to be kind of the same things regardless of where they're at in parenting. It's, am I good enough? It's loving and accepting their body fully. It's fulfillment and life purpose. Those tend to be kind of the underlying themes. Okay. And then how that looks in their life as it's currently showing up based on what stage of mothering they're in can be very different. The core needs tend to be similar.
Well, the core values, right? Is that what you also like, making your clients aware of what their core values are?
Yes, I love using core values because a lot of times they don't even realize that they are living a wonderful life and they're just beating themselves and judging themselves, and they can, yes, make things much easier on themselves with their organization and their stress and their frantic energy and all of that. But a lot of times they are meeting the basic core values that they have for their family and doing an incredible job at loving their kids unconditionally and having family time, but their brain is so stressed out and it's spending so much time in the past or in the present or in the future, and that they're missing the present time when they're living the life that they do want, when they are having the moments of ease and the positive emotions. Their brain's just too busy to kind of be there with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's very good. It really is. Also, it's another thing I kind of want to bring up too. Just again, working with women, again, this is a while ago, but like 5 years ago, and I'm sure you get this problem a lot. What is your perception on daycare now and the stress that it causes families and mothers when it comes to, well, I guess a lot of things, like obviously kids get sick or even the extreme price raises of daycare.
Yeah. And I think you're in Minnesota too, correct?
Yep, correct.
We have, at least we used to have like the highest rates for childcare in the nation. I don't know where we stand currently, but I'm sure we're still up there.
Well, what is average, you think? At least a couple thousand, or am I way?
Oh man. I mean, it can totally be all over the charts, but I'll just say that my sister and brother-in-law are putting their kids into a private Catholic school, and their childcare was more expensive than private Catholic school. Okay. So quite a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's super taxing on both parents, but this is where it does tend to get to the default parenting. If the mom is the one that ultimately, when it comes down to it, has to figure out the childcare, the daycare, the schooling situations, and be the one doing all of that communication back and forth, figuring out when the payments are due, all of that stuff, it is very stressful and overwhelming. And yeah, America is definitely not one of the best countries for childcare by any means. We have a lot that I wish that we would kind of improve there.
So wait a second, I'm trying to learn. So that's the invisible, what should we call it again?
Maybe? So there's the invisible workload. Yeah.
Is that the invisible? Okay, good. I'm trying to, okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, absolutely the man or whoever might be in charge of it, but a lot of times the women will just be the ones to automatically take on kind of the role of doing the social events, doing all of the school, making the doctor's appointments. For some reason, that seems to be a very common pattern that we have, where the dads will help if you like write down the list and say, hey, I need you to do this. They're more than willing to help. But a lot of times dad's not like, when's our kid's annual doctor appointment? Oh, of course it's in September, because that's when it was last year, type of thing.
So you're saying it's the mother that's just initially taking the initiative for this?
A lot of times. And I mean, a lot of mothers do ask for help, and then sometimes the father may forget or not follow through on that. And then she kind of ends up doing it anyway. Just that's pretty stereotypical, but I do see it happening a lot with clients who have amazing husbands who are more than willing to help, but their brains just are not like trained, or they have not learned how to be thinking about all those things. Or, I mean, I guess the mom potentially, it's funny because like the mom is the default parent, as if she's the one carrying the child. It's either the surrogate or the mother. Like somebody is the default parent for those 9 months. It's all you're thinking about, and you're having this intimate relationship with this little being that's in your body. And then I think naturally, like when they come out of the womb, you have these appointments that mom is getting checked, baby's getting checked. And so for some reason, it's like, we just continue that pattern of, oh, well, yeah, like medical appointments. Like I was the one that made the baby appointments, so I'm just going to keep doing these other appointments. It, you know, potentially that's part of the issue too.
Well, then, so you'd probably want the husband also to take at least some initiative and be like, no, honey, no baby. I'm here with you. I'm going to be with you every step of the way. I'm going to help you with this. And then it's more like a mutual thing.
I mean, I think in an ideal world, it'd be a 50-50, yeah, which they, I mean, we still aren't at, even though we're much better than we previously have been. But I think it's about what works for the couple and just figuring out something that works for you. Like ideally, there's a book called Fair Play, and I love this book, and I can't remember the author right now, unfortunately, but you actually have like little cards with the name of tasks, and you cut out like, I think it's like 150 cards. But it's tasks from like who does the lawn care, who does car stuff, who does medical appointments, who buys the kids clothes, who does the dishes. And you literally put your tasks in piles of like the one spouse and the other spouse. And you see whose pile is bigger, who has more of this workload. So ideally, those would be somewhat even, but every relationship is different. Some people really like being busy and working, and some people need a lot more rest. And I think it doesn't necessarily have to be 50-50, but is it working in your relationship in a way that seems like, is there respect is kind of a bottom line. And then also, are both people, are they both using emotional maturity, and are they both taking care of their emotional needs at the same time and not kind of expecting it to be based on their partner's actions necessarily?
And if that does happen, when it comes to the negativity and resentment, you got to find different ways to express that and be assertive. That's what I like working with my clients on. Because again, when I do work with women, yes, primary goal is drug issues. Again, up drugs, alcohol. But then again, it's just like the husband's not doing this or that. I'm like, okay, well, what are different ways we can communicate our needs to our spouse without being aggressive, passive aggressive? So again, we're not hanging on to that resentment, and then you get the red flags. And then if you keep ignoring the red flags, then more bad things are going to happen along the way.
I love that you bring up communication and the passive aggressive thing as well, because I think women a lot of times are trained to be passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Like they're trained from a little child to be like, don't say anything mean. So they have to say it in like the sneaky, underhanded way. Where I've noticed that boys are allowed to either like physically do things more with other kids saying, I don't like that, or just be verbally more assertive without getting reprimanded. This is what I notice on the playground all the time. Whereas girls are going to get reprimanded for speaking the truth and saying their, you know, experience if it doesn't sound polite and kind. And so I think that just continues on. And that's a huge thing that I work on is confidence and being able to assertively say something with kindness, because we're so scared. And I mean, we're like, a lot of us are just such nurturing, loving people. And that's just our like personal dynamic. And then you're trying to say something mean, but it feels bad and it feels icky for you to say it. So learning to say something, please don't do that, I didn't like that, from a place more of neutrality, where we're not judging the other person, we're not being mean, but we are saying the truth for ourselves with kindness.
Well, again, it's respecting yourself and your needs. Unfortunately, and this can go for wives or husbands, it's like, if I'm assertive and tell the truth, he's going to get angry or she's going to get angry and yell at me. I don't want that. So how can I get around that?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're trying to like affect how the other person is going to emotionally experience or react to us. And unfortunately that doesn't work. We can only be playing on our side of the field and say something with kindness, respect, and our truth. And then they get to react however they want, as long as it's not hurting us, obviously, but they get to have their tantrum or, you know, emotionally feel whatever they want.
What I've noticed too with my clients and just people in general is passive aggressive is just more the easier way out, where I'm going to do something where, again, it kind of goes like I lose and you lose, where I'm going to take you down with me. So I'm not going to, again, have the ability to say what I want, but I'm going to do something to get your attention so you know, or you think that I'm angry. So the classic example, especially with couples, is the door slamming. Door slamming is classic example. It's like, oh, I'm mad. Like, I'm going to say something, but I'm not, but I'm going to walk away and slam the door. And hopefully he takes the slamming is that I'm angry at him.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those messages that we're trying to like telepathically get into somebody's head that never works. But when we're in that place of feeling like a victim and feeling hopeless or powerless, it's like, you have to do something because you feel so powerless. And that's a huge part of, you know, working on confidence and empowering yourself. So you don't have to depend on another human. You always know that you're, you know, okay. And you've got you. And then however your partner or spouse or kids or however other people in your life show up, that's just the icing on the cake.
No, absolutely. And again, just knowing yourself, knowing the relationship and where you stand in the relationship too. And I know earlier you were talking about like support and how important it is. Do you ever have clients that, again, struggle asking for help, even when it comes to their fellow family members too?
Great question. All the time. This is the number one thing I wish that we as moms would do is ask for 10 times more support than you think you need. Like if you're looking at your calendar, you're seeing what all these activities and what's all going on. Most of us are like, okay, I've got all of this. When really, if we had help for like half of the things that we're doing, it would be so beneficial. But I think because we are, again, comparing ourselves to social media, comparing ourselves to what's going on elsewhere and what other moms are doing. But I'm telling you, these other moms are not having this easy. They're exhausted. They're overwhelmed. They're frantic. They're stressed out just like you are. We all just need to start building in more support into this whole system of parenting and not just family and spouses, like paid or unpaid, like switching childcare, switching tasks, all of it. We definitely could use more support.
I want to piggyback off what you just said now, which is funny because I just feel like, let's say the grandparents or the aunts and uncles, the funny thing is, I think they want to help. They're probably excited to help. They want to see the baby and all that too. So it makes it kind of ironic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess like also the pandemic threw a huge wrench in this situation where we really, and maybe we're using that like, well, I survived through that and I managed to do that. So why would I have someone come fold my laundry? Or why would I have someone, you know, watch my kids so I could take a nap once a week? Or why would I, because I managed. And again, you might have, but was that the best thing for your well-being? So just giving ourselves permission to be like, no, it's actually crazy to not get more support with, look at how many hours you're working, whether it's in the home or out, look at how many tasks you have, look at how many activities. Like if you took yourself at age 21 or 22 and you threw yourself into this lifestyle for like a week, your like younger self would be like, this is crazy bananas. Mm-hmm. There is no way I'm doing this. But since we're like the frog in the boiling water, we get to here and we're like, no, I'll just keep adding more into my plate. It's fine. I've got this. Just add more.
Well, is it a fear of like, I don't want to be a burden to others, or it may make me look like a bad mom if I'm always asking my mother-in-law or whatever for help?
Yeah, I know. Like I'm super lucky with childcare to have my mother-in-law and my mom help. And I know all of this stuff. And I find myself even being like, oh, I just don't want to burden them again because I just asked them, you know, when it is like, they know that I value their help so much and they can say no. That's another thing too. It's like, they always have the option to say no, but we don't want to feel like we're pushing someone into saying yes. And just realizing that we're not that powerful. We actually can't make other humans say or do anything. And knowing that, you know, if you're interacting with them with love and with kindness and with respect, then hopefully, you know, they will say no if it is too much for them.
Okay. I want to flip a scenario with you. Do you ever get the client scenarios of families too involved?
Yes. That one's a funny one. I do. there's that. And then there's a lot around having a child and mostly being too involved with wanting to change your parenting style. Is a really big one because, you know, we did it this way and it worked when you were a kid. Or like, I mean, there's just so many different ways of parenting. When I was a little kid, my mom didn't know 7 different types of parenting. And there also wasn't like 8 different ways of eating. Like there weren't kids eating vegan and kids eating paleo and kids eating keto. And I mean, there's just so many options, which is great and fantastic, but there's so many more things to have an opinion, so many more things to do differently, whether it's political beliefs or vaccinations or not, or food or activities. There's just so many, much variety and so many things for the families to want to be involved in from a good, intentional place. But it can be really overwhelming as a parent too.
And again, I know we're kind of getting into family systems, family therapy. And also I've watched or listened to a lot of relationship podcasts. And it's tough because what if, let's say, hypothetical scenario, like it's the husband's mother kind of overbearing, or if it's your mom, I guess whose responsibility is it to set boundaries with that parent? Is it the husband's job if it's his mom, or is it your job if it's your mom type thing?
I mean, I think it depends on the relationship and on where the couple's at. In an ideal world, both of you would feel like empowered enough to just say, oh, hey, yeah, we're actually not going to do it that way. You know, even if it is your in-laws, to be like, oh, I totally see where you're got from that opinion, but actually we're going to do it this way. That would be the ideal situation, but this is such a tricky spot. And we coach on this so much. Because yeah, it can get sticky.
Right. You're absolutely right. And when you said about like comfort and knowing kind of where you stand with like the in-laws or where he stands with maybe your family, it plays a huge difference in it. You know?
Yeah. There's a lot of factors for sure.
But like you said, you wish you would have a loving, caring relationship with everyone. It would make it easier.
Yep. And then we work on too, like if you don't have the support of someone, or if there is a relationship that's not safe to have, if you need to set a boundary, say, look, like we're not, you are not a person that we feel safe with our child being around. Like you do have to set a boundary sometimes, and doing it from a place of not anger, like being able to do it from a place of, you know, as close to love as you can get, even if it's just being neutral about it, is feels so much better than when you feel like you have to like be so aggressive, or angry or all of that. But I mean, yeah, there's a lot of wounds that need to be healed in people. There's a lot of trauma, and that's where I always, when it's working with trauma specifically, or mental health, if it goes outside of my realm, then I absolutely have my clients go to a therapist, because like, I think everyone could use trauma therapy. And I wish that we had counselors and mental health professionals and therapy, like in elementary school. I would be so happy if that was just common practice.
I agree. I really do. And this is what I teach my clients too, is because they're afraid of even being politely assertive of the person, because again, that reaction, what I always tell them is that's not your problem. You're taking care of yourself. Yeah. If they want to react that way, then that's on them. And that's who they are as a person. Yeah. You need to do what's best for you and to help yourself feel loved and respected.
Absolutely. Yes.
If they want to blow up on you, that's on them.
I love that. Yes. Because it is like you treating yourself kindly is not hurting someone else. Yes. And that's a huge part of my practice, is like you cannot hurt someone else's feelings. It's actually what I teach my child, which is very interesting to watch this play out. But when another person will say like your kid hurt my kid's feelings, or when it comes to that, I'm like, I actually do disagree. My child said something unkind. And like for that, it's like, yes, I can make a request that he apologizes. But again, you can't really force things out of another human.
Yes.
Children get much more out of modeling the behavior and discussing it after. But it is not possible. Like even if someone said to me, you're the worst parent in the entire world, or if my kid's like, I hate you, you're a terrible mom, which he has used, by the way. That was a good power move that he's used several times. Yeah. I don't automatically have to get offended, and I don't automatically have to get hurt by that. That's just kind of our typical reaction in society from how we've been brought up. But I only get hurt by those things if I myself believe them to be true. I don't think that I'm a terrible mother. So I can say, you're really hurt right now. I can see that you want power, and you feel powerless, and you want to hurt me because that would feel better than what you're feeling. So I'm so sorry that you're hurting. And then we move on or whatever. But yes, it is not possible to hurt another person's feelings, because that is, like you said, just all on them.
Absolutely.
But you can be unkind. Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's funny. I had one of my professors in grad school said the exact same thing you did, but in a different way, where he's like, you push your own buttons. Regardless of what a person says are due to you, you have the ability to like have an emotional reaction. So as in, you push your own buttons, even if so-and-so is doing it on person, well, that's who they are. But again, you have the power and the ability to like get mad at that if you want.
Yeah. And sometimes we do too. And I think allowing yourself, it's not bad to feel negative emotions. Absolutely. Sometimes we're like, yeah, I'm just like, some days I'm like, oh, I'm feeling really frustrated, and I don't actually want to do the work to not feel frustrated today. So I'm just going to be frustrated for the next couple of hours. It's fine. I know I'm doing this to myself, but it takes less effort right now. So I'm just going to go about my day and feel frustration.
Beautiful. No, that's right. It's just, Anger is an emotion. A lot of times, yes, it is like a mask type emotion, and there's a lot of different types of emotions underneath it, but you can validate it. It's what you do with it that's important, though.
Yes, absolutely.
So I know you mentioned, again, more about support. Is there like apps where mothers can go like to get support, or is there groups, or is there anything like that? I'm just curious.
That's really funny. There's a lot of support groups on Facebook. Okay. Granted, sometimes they do tend to get a little bit catty or political, but there's a ton of motherhood support groups out there. I actually was just asked to be a coach on the Parenting Playbook app.
Nice.
So yeah, Parenting Playbook. And it's a really cool app because it's kind of a mix between, I would say, like Pinterest and maybe a Facebook type thing, where moms can go get articles and information on parenting and on things that they're interested in, and then also connect with other people, other moms there, and learn parenting tips. And yeah, so that's kind of a fun app that just came out. Cool. Was just released. Yeah. And then getting, you know, support anywhere you can too, whether it be therapy or coaching or just your friends. A lot of moms do feel very, very isolated. And I think to go on social media and find a place that feels good to you to be, and find a couple of people who will support you there, is really nice too, because you can do it during a pandemic. You can do it from afar. You can find a hobby that you're interested in. There's like moms who work out, moms who lift, moms who knit. Like, there's all sorts of cool things you can find.
So I have a question. So again, you mentioned that your husband is a police officer.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, thank you for your service too, by the way. I appreciate it.
Thanks. This is a interesting time to be a law enforcement family in Minnesota.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you ever work with clients who have a husband like in law enforcement or a fire department? And do they deal with maybe similar stress than you do?
I do have several clients that are police wives, and it's just kind of the additional, a lot of our, besides just that anxiety of something bad's going to happen, because that's, I'm sure when you do are in like the trauma world, there are some times where you can't get away from the trauma. Like, you can't get away from being in danger or from your child having a medical issue or whatever. I forgot what the question was now originally.
I guess different ways you could show empathy are, do you ever do any type of like self-disclosure? Again, if so-and-so's husband's going through this, maybe you could relate to her, or have you ever been a person?
Oh yeah. I mean, there are a lot of groups that are specifically for law enforcement wives. It is a community that, similar to military families, is very good about supporting each other. The interesting part about law enforcement is military wives are very good in supporting each other locally, at their base or in the cities that they are. Law enforcement is absolutely not good at that at all. We're very good nationally, but there are like, most police departments, you will not have the spouses, girlfriends, wives hanging out together, or friends in the department themselves. It's kind of an interesting difference between the law enforcement field and the military field. Granted, the law enforcement field is decreasing by, you know, 40% or so right now, and it's just a big transition, and there's a lot going on there too. But I love coaching these women. We have some interesting challenges that I really like helping us kind of overcome.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, and finally too, what you're doing is great. And again, I totally appreciate what you're doing for the field of mental health, even life coaching and all that stuff. Do you have any future goals that you want to accomplish? Like, let's say in a year from now, 2 years now, or do you have any projects you're thinking about working on?
Yeah. So right now I do one-on-one coaching, which I absolutely love. I have the best clients ever, in my opinion, and we have such a good time. And eventually I would love to do group coaching, just so I can help impact more people, bring in as many women as possible, because I love the idea of us helping each other and building that community, that judgment-free place for moms to help empower each other. So that is definitely a goal that I have.
Well, that's amazing. It really is. And I hope you do that. I really do.
Yeah, thank you.
And so if any of my listeners do want to get a hold of you, is there a particular websites or email addresses they could use to contact you?
Yeah. So my website is ashleydunwell.com. My email, please feel free to reach out and email me about anything. I'd love to chat, is ashley@ashleydunwell. Ashley at Ashley Dunwald. Yeah. And Dunwald is D-U-N-N-W-A-L-D. Ashley is spelled the typical way, A-S-H-L-E-Y. I am on Instagram at Ashley Dunwald Coach as well.
Well, that's awesome. And again, I'll make sure I put those links too in my show notes. So we're all set there.
Great. Yeah. I'd love to chat with other moms.
Oh yeah. You'll get some. You have a lot of fans in my neck of the woods. So
awesome. Definitely.
Well, again, I just want to say thank you so much for an amazing episode. I really appreciated having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
I just want to thank Ashley and all my BHI listeners for another awesome episode. I had a blast. Again, I just want to inform all of my listeners that the content and information expressed in my episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself dealing with any type of addiction or mental health issues, please seek the care of a licensed medical doctor and a licensed mental health professional. All right, everyone, until next time, have a good night. Bye.